Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
And welcome to the Friday Special, a podcast by Guitar Nerds. Now, for 2020, the Friday Special series is running every week, and each week I'll have a new guest from the world of guitars, amplification, effects pedals. We're going to have brands and producers and musicians. I am your host, Joe Branton, and I'm joined this week by Mikey Demas. Hello, Mikey, and Hey. Welcome to the show.
Hey. Thanks, man.
Yes, wonderful. Well, it's great to have you back, because, of course, we've had you on the podcast a few times in many different forms. I guess you're a bit of a familiar face to the Guitar Nerds community and the entire guitar community, I guess, both from your success as a guitarist in Skindred and now the launch of your pedal brand in Redbeard Effects.
Yeah.
Which is pretty awesome.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it's really awesome.
Yeah, and you were kind enough to come on the podcast when you were launching Redbeard Effects in the first few days of the company's kind of being absolutely out and about with its first pedal when you launched the Red Mist Mark IV.
That's right.
Which was great. So thank you very much for coming on for then. Obviously, right. Since then you've released another pedal. You've now got the Honey Badger Octave Fuzz.
Yeah, we released that at NAMM this year, and that's, you know, we had them both ready to go, and we were kind of like, which one do we put out first? It was kind of like flip a coin, because the Honey Badger's kind of crazy, and we weren't sure whether to put something totally crazy, you know, out there first, and just make people think, what is this? We thought, well, you know, drive pedals are kind of a good entry to effects pedals, and so we launched the Red Mist, and then came the pincer attack with the Honey Badger in the new year.
Yeah, I guess that is the it's a good way to sort of set the bar for an effects pedal brand coming in with a drive, because if you can do a good drive, then, you know, you're probably going to be good at other things as well. It's a good essential pedal to have, and of course the Red Mist was met with, you know, a lot of positive feedback. Everyone seemed to really dig that pedal.
Yeah, we've had loads of really positive feedback about it. It's and it's tricky doing a drive, because obviously there's so many out there, and yeah. how do you make it different? How do you make it unique? And
exactly, there's every type of drive. What do you go for? Do you go for a high gain? Do you go for a transparent, you know, a Marshall in a box?
Yeah, and it depends, you know, what kind of thing you're putting it into. And the one thing we didn't want to do was be all things to all people, you know. We wanted it to be stand on its own two feet, be its own thing, be, you know, versatile within its own parameters. Because, you know, so many drive pedals have like a, you know, well, at least up to a point, so many drive pedals just had like a tone control, and it would kind of thinned out or fanned up a bit, but really wanted something with really versatile and powerful EQ that could really demolish your amp or totally suck everything out. Something that was really, really tweakable, you know? And I'm really stoked with it. It's everyone who's got one is kind of blown away with with what it can do.
Yeah, it's definitely, I mean, it absolutely has its very own feel and style. It's certainly not something that's, I mean, this is as you know, the other guys covered with you in the podcast before, but it's mm-hmm. it's certainly not something that's like another Tube Screamer clone or really anything else like that. There's nothing to compare this to. It is very much a Red Mist Mark IV, and you have to hear this pedal to understand, I guess, what it is.
Yeah, we didn't want to do any clones. We didn't want to do anything that had, you know, been done a million times before.
No, and I think you said that because you run this company with Adrian Thorpe from Thorpe FX.
Yes,
it's a collaboration between the two of you, which is incredible. From the consumer's perspective, to have Thorpe pedals, you know, in another brand, it's even more sort of pedals being, you know, co-designed by Adrian Thorpe is a fantastic thing.
I fell on my feet, man, because, you know, I'm an unknown quantity in the pedal world. So, you know, it would have been a very different endeavor if I hadn't, if I didn't have Thorpe sort of on side.
Well, this is one thing that you've mentioned before as well, I guess, is you were very keen for Redbeard FX to be very much a British brand, a British built brand, rather than pedals that were that were made anywhere else, and mm-hmm. or these were all hand built British pedals that, you know, actually they're incredibly aggressively priced for handmade British pedals as well, because, you know, certainly in the case of the Red Mist, what do you keep that down to, like 150, something like that, around there.
I think the Red Mist is 185.
Oh, is it 185?
Yeah, the Red Mist is 185. I think the Honey Badger is 199.
Right. Yeah, still, yeah, and an incredible price point for stuff that's handmade over here. So
yeah, we make everything ourselves. You know, I mean, like the enclosures are made in the UK. You know, all the pedals are built from scratch in the UK, and everything's packaged, sent out. We do it all ourselves, so it's very much a British endeavor. So yeah,
and it comes, they come in their own little coffee bag as well.
They do, yeah. They do,
which is, it's a little just fantastic thing. Yeah, it keeps the freshness in, which is excellent.
It keeps the freshness in for up to 6 months. And after
but as a British brand as well, just the fact that you've got Adrian Thorpe on board as someone who's really kind of the, you know, the head of the game at the moment in British pedals. Like there's mm-hmm. there's almost no one more, you know, more important, dare I say, sort of making effects pedals at the moment in the UK. So fantastic that you've gone straight to the cream of the crop for that.
Yeah, I lucked out.
Yeah, exactly. And of course you've made Redbeard. You've been very specific to make sure the two brands are very separated. So, of course, the chassis and the appearance are different, but the ethos behind the brands are very different as well. Because the idea behind Redbeard is that you can do the crazier things, I guess, that you might not see coming right. from Thorpe, which that are more incredibly
more
high quality functional pedals coming from Thorpe, and these you can push the boundaries a little bit more, which of course you have with the Honey Badger.
Yeah, the Honey Badger Octave Fuzz, absolutely mental pedal, absolutely crazy. It's I'm sure most people listening to the podcast and the Guitar Nerds community will have seen or heard of it a little bit perhaps, but it's a really, really exciting fuzz with a switchable octave mode that has a blendable -2 or -1 octave, so it's like two sub octaves combined with a fuzz. And it's really glitchy and monophonic, analog sounding madness. You know?
Yeah, which is exactly what you want from a fuzz. I love that I love that you got two octaves down on there. It's like coupling an old Boss OC2 mm-hmm. with a fuzz. You know,
yeah, that's the vibe. Really, it's kind of a little unpredictable. You know, depending on where you play on the neck, depending what pickup you use, or how aggressively you play it, it can be really unpredictable. It can give really sort of smooth, synthy kind of, you know, vibes depending on how you play.
And
it's just one of those pedals that you kind of turn on for a bit of fun, and then you realize that about 40 minutes has gone past and you're just kind of still noodling, you know.
Yeah.
it's one of those ones that makes you just want to play, which is great.
Yeah, and works just as well on bass as it does guitar, which is is fantastic, as it's been sort of widely noted as being an equally good bass player, which is very rare for a an octave fuzz.
Yeah, it tracks really well on bass, and it works a lot. It works well on synth as well, we found.
Oh, really?
Which is quite fun. Yeah, a fellow who bought one, he uploaded a video the other day, and he sent it to me of him putting it through a an old analog synth, and I was watching it a couple of days ago going, man, this is awesome. I mean, we tested it on synths as well, but neither of us own anything particularly juicy. We've got a lot of modern stuff, but neither of us have any old synths to hand, so seeing people play through old stuff is kind of really cool.
Yeah Wicked. But that's it at the moment for Redbeard. You're two pedals into this brand, but it's still very much early doors, I guess.
Yeah, we've got some stuff that we're working on at the moment. We're working towards our next product, which, you know, with the current climate, is kind of, our goal was probably to release something next year at NAMM, but given that NAMM's a sort of unknown quantity now, will it happen? Or, it's bought us a bit of time really just to kind of line up all our ducks with that. So that's kind of a blessing, but, you know, it's also a shame that the world's on lockdown, because, well, it's just a shame for everybody. It's difficult, isn't it? But it's definitely been able to, it's allowed me to kind of work on some things. And I know Thorpe's, I don't know if his day-to-day's changed much, to be honest. That guy works all day, every day. And nothing's really changed.
No, well, I imagine, I think most people are sat at home with nothing else to do other than buying pedals. So I imagine it's...
if it's the first time in a long time I've sort of been forced to be in one place for any long period of time. So, unfortunately, obviously my summer fell to pieces with the corona situation.
Yeah.
So, which is, a major, major pain, but also it's quite a blessing just for some downtime and, just a chance to focus on things at hand and work on stuff from home. So, which I've been doing. I've been building pedals like a nutter.
That's cool. We'll be very excited to see what comes out next from Redbeard anyway, especially as you've got this kind of the downtime to work on it even more, which would be super cool. The Redbeard stuff, the two pedals you've released, I don't know if this has been covered before, but were both pedals kind of a choice solely by you, as in were they things that you needed or used on your essential pedal boards, or have you designed them to be more general, are these Mikey Demas pedals?
The latter was definitely not what I wanted to do, because, respectfully to my band and our career, at no point was I kind of like, well, I'm a signature artist and people are going to want to do what I do. Like, that's not really the vibe at all. I'm flattered that there are bits of gear out there that have my name on them. Obviously, it's incredible, and that's kind of a dream come true, really. But in terms of something, that you're putting out there, you kind of want it to be a bit more versatile than just signature, so to speak. I don't know. Right. I mean, I personally speaking, when I was coming up, there were very few bits of sort of signature gear that were kind of, that would light me up. You know what I mean? Like, you'd see people playing like Stevie Ray Vaughan Strats, and it just never really appealed to me, to be honest with you.
I know what you mean. It's something that we've spoken about before as well. It's like, do you ignore it, or do you get something because you're really into the artist? But if you're getting it because you're really into the artist, is that just a little bit sad? Like, line to tread.
More than anything, for me, what I wanted to do with Redbeard was to make stuff that has a certain attitude towards, it puts a certain attitude out there. And, depending on what kind of music you play, or like what kind of guitar you play, what kind of amp you play, what your vibe is, it's suited more to certain kinds of people than others, and that goes for the kind of circuit designs we've developed as well. Like we were saying, we were at no point currently are we looking to release a kind of transparent overdrive clone scenario. I don't think, there's plenty of people doing that really well. And you know, fair play. And, you know, who doesn't love a clon? I do. But but it's not something that I would necessarily use for music that I play or, you know, the kind of stuff I'm into. So it was really just wanting to do edgier stuff. That
yeah, it's definitely edgier. Like new sounds, I think, is the kind of the Redbeard thing. There's not, you're not trying to do vintage correct reissues of stuff.
Not really, no. Just, you know, trying to push the envelope a bit of what a pedal can do or what you can do with an instrument that you plug into it. Because for me, so many times a song or a riff or an idea can be born out of a new bit of gear. And, you know, you'll get a new pedal or a new guitar, a new amp or something. And if it does something inspiring and different to anything else you have or anything else you've ever tried, for me, that's everything, you know. I'm not really looking to do anything which you switch on for 3 seconds of a song and that's it, you know. It's kind of like, this is the sound of this whole song, or this is the sound of like my vibe, you know what I mean? I don't know.
You're trying to make things that are an essential part of people's pedal boards, I guess.
That would be a dream, you know. Like, obviously, something like the Honey Badger is an always on pedal. you're gonna have a pretty crazy always on sound, yeah. But totally, like, I wanted that pedal to like inspire a riff or just, you know, a sound of a record or just...
Well, that's what it is, isn't it? It's a riff machine, that right. pedal.
Yeah, totally. Like, it inspires that kind of like one stringy kind of up near the 12th fret playing, you know. It's sort of by happy accident, really. It kind of, for me, it's sort of reminiscent of like that kind of Scott Holiday Rival Sons, you know, octavey, fuzzy, drivey, you know, that kind of vibe, things like that kind of just you play in this kind of like rock and roll riffs on it on one string. It just kind of adds a special quantity to it that's exciting and groovy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think of it, yeah, that for that sort of sound always for me is like supercharged Jack White. That's
exactly
kind of
that kind of thing.
That's what you want. Riffs that just, one string riffs with a load of octave fuzz. Yeah, fantastic.
Or, you know, it's great for playing lead on. It's sort of, it's wacky and it's inspiring. You just want, for me, I just like music that kind of makes you feel like a bit of a badass, really, you know. And, and if a pedal can do that to an otherwise fairly uninspiring tone, then that's great.
Yeah.
You know, and that goes for the Red Mist as well. You know, there's so much that pedal can do. It can turn a pretty plain clean amp or a dry, you know, a crunchy amp into something really, really over the top. And with the EQ on it, it's just, it can transform things that you're kind of bored of into being really, really exciting.
Yeah, both pedals need nothing more than like a clean pedal platform. Right. Like, you don't have to, you know, obviously great if you want to add anything else to it, but you don't need anything other than the most sterile of sounds to then, you know, to get the most out of these pedals.
That's right. And of course, with the, you know, given that Thorpey has designed all these things, and, you know, we've sort of done it together, but, you know, prototyping and tweaking things back and forth, but you know that it comes with an amount of quality that's kind of second to none, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when, as you say, all the chassis are their own thing and they're made over here as well.
Well, this is it. I mean, when I started, when I had this idea to do this, I was kind of like, you know, I could have gone down the road of buying a quantity of existing enclosures and, I don't know, having them powder coated and coming up with some labels, that kind of thing. Because that's, you know, that's fairly straightforward thing to do. But, you know, when I met Thorpey, it was kind of, no, we're going to go fully individual and custom here. I was like, from an engineering point of view, everything we've done, from like, you know, the way the PCB's designed, the components we use, the enclosures and the packaging, everything, we went all in. We didn't mess around with any of it. We didn't half-ass any of it. So I'm really proud of what we've put out there, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. As you should be. Now, I saw from the internet, I can't remember where, probably Pedal Boards of Doom, that you were building yourself a little isolation pedal board at the moment.
Yeah, well, that was actually one of our customers who's a bass player, actually.
Oh, really?
Who recently bought a Honey Badger and loves it. But that was a picture he sent over, and I've sort of been sharing that around just because it's people are chiming in with, you know, what's that pedal there? What's that pedal there? That kind of thing, which is always good. But yeah, loads of people have assumed that's something I'm building, but I am building a I am building an isolation pedal board.
But I saw the Kemper on there, so I assumed it was
a guitar player. Okay, yeah, because I do have Kemper stuff as well, but yeah. All that's under lock and key in the studio at the moment in Bristol, unfortunately. So yeah, I'm kind of at home with various bits and pieces. Thankfully, I do have enough stuff to mess around with pedalboard stuff. That's including cool. the thing I'm most excited about is the Two Notes Cab M,
right?
Which we've got a couple of them. Redbeard's got a couple, Thorpey's got a couple, and I've sort of liberated one of them to have at home. And obviously they just recently did an update where it's added a preamp to the what's on offer inside. So you really only, that's basically a pedal platform now, pedal.
It's mad that they can just do that one update, and they've changed what that product is.
It's the beauty of DSP, isn't it? You know, just,
yeah.
We're just going to completely revolutionise what the guts of this thing do. It's magic, really.
Yeah, yeah,
absolutely magic. I haven't had the chance to get my head into it properly, but everyone's going, this is brilliant. So it's great because, you know, even doing at the guitar show where we had, you know, as you know, given that it's a really noisy environment, we were, and obviously being at NAMM for the first time this year was a big learning curve for me, and realizing that I needed some kind of bulletproof headphone solution for, you know, people wanting to plug into our pedals and check them out. The Two Note stuff seemed like a no-brainer. We just needed some kind of preampy vibe in front of it, just to kind of absorb pedals and kind of just do that thing to make it sound less sterile. Do you know what I mean? And now that we actually used a small trees in front of the cabin, which we found to be really cool because it's got it's obviously got the valve. It's like a valve gain stage before it hits the hits the cab.
Wait, I don't know about small trees.
What?
Yeah, I don't know about them. What is the small trees?
The small trees is made by Audio Kitchen.
Oh, I know about this. Yes, okay. It's the Audio Kitchen thing. Tell me about it anyway, though.
Well, so the Big Trees is kind of like a really large format pedal, which is, you know, has a few valves in it, and it can be either a pedal or an amp. I've used that for 10 years on pretty much on every record we've done.
Really?
In the last 10 years, yeah. Oh, it's great. It's so cool. It's just a really awesome guitar pedal. It's, you know, they're not cheap, they're quite expensive.
£749 on Anderton's at the moment if you're in the UK.
Yeah, so the small trees is like the scaled down one knob version of that, so it's basically the best bits of it in one smaller box, and you basically got one gain knob, I suppose. Well, I think it's gain or level, I don't know, but
wonderful.
Yeah, so basically that in front of an IR cab simulator, kind of, it's a great system for just absorbing pedals, because what you find with the digital stuff is if you have gain pedals in front of digital stuff, then sometimes it clips the digital input, and so you get all this horrible, you know, clipping and kind of artifacting, which isn't very pleasant to be playing with. So something like the small trees was really great in front of a digital cab scenario to kind of soak up what the pedals do, and it just makes it more real.
Right.
So yeah, we were using that. I was also using a Hudson Broadcast for doing that at the guitar show. Oh, another pedal board.
I can't get enough of the Hudson Broadcast.
Yeah, I love that thing.
It's a wonderful, wonderful pedal.
Super cool.
But which one do you have? The three or the four?
I've got the four knob version, like the two foot switch job.
Ooh. What is the fourth knob? Because there's just a gain switch on the three.
Right. And it basically, so there's a knob, there's two gain knobs, so there's a higher gain knob and a lower gain knob, and basically the foot switch changes the mode. So you've got two gain settings basically. So one foot switch turns it on and off, and then the other foot switch flicks between the gains. So rather than it being a heavy toggle that you have to bend down and go click, it's just basically you can have two separate settings and foot switch between the two.
Uh-huh. That's very good.
Yeah, and it's got those delicious Marconi-style Neve-esque knobs on it, which is... I'm a sucker for them. So.
Yeah, I have to say, yeah, absolutely.
If the Hudson Broadcast looked different, you might feel differently about it. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's a great pedal, but God, it just looks so cool.
Yeah, they very, very, very good at that, Hudson. Another British pedal company, but very good at making pedals looking incredibly desirable. What's the other thing I have by them? The Sidecar. With their lovely sort of stamped, because it's a plain, simple, you know, Korn-esque chassis, and then they just have like an actual...
Like a top plate.
Yeah, like a top plate, not stamped, yeah, a top plate with the name of whatever that pedal is.
So it's kind of like a scratch plate almost, like so it's like 3-ply, I think, or 2-ply, and then I guess they probably laser through the top level so that it's white on top and black underneath, and so it exposes the black underneath.
Yes, very much so. This
is my engineering head here. So we went through all these different approaches.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a sucker for that, like that functional appearance, that sort of like farming implement style thing. Like what Petty John Electronics have the same thing. That sort of I want the gear that I use to look like it could kill a man if thrown.
that's the goal.
Yes, exactly. And that's something that those brands and, you know, obviously also Redbeard and Thorby managed to do. Incredibly heavyweight, chunky. Pedals.
You could quite easily dispose of someone if you gave them a smart tap on the back of the napper with a Redbeard pedal. But you know they're surprisingly light as well because they are made of aluminum.
Aluminum. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. I only recently learned that it's not a pronunciation thing. It is actually
it's a spelling thing.
And in fact, we're wrong that it was spelled that way first. Even if that is obviously incorrect to the rest of the periodic table, but. Nonetheless, it was spelt that way first. Yeah, sucks. We're wrong. So yeah, trivia. You've got it. Well, I mean, come on. Everyone's doing a quiz every other day of the week at the moment. You might as well. This is fodder for your quizzes, everyone. Yeah,
this is a good one, actually. I do two a week. I do one on Friday and one on Saturday with various different friendship groups.
Oh, nice.
And I keep taking the mick out of me because I win that one most weeks. Just because, and I'm on my own, so people tell me I'm cheating, but I'm genuinely not. I just know loads of really useless information until quiz night, and then I come out of retirement to win the quiz.
That's good, excellent. I've been I keep being made quiz master for a couple of these things, but the only things I really know anything about are the movie Hook, the movie Jurassic Park. And then just guitar stuff. So it's people are getting quite bored with the quiz rounds.
It's
so,
now my goal to get you on Mastermind to talk about one of the two. I'd love to hear you talk about Hook with some level of authority and expertise. That's a podcast all in itself.
There is probably the single greatest movie ever committed to film. Hook. I stand by that. Jurassic Park in a close second, but Hook. Absolutely, the greatest.
I didn't know that about you. Now
yeah.
I know.
Yeah, there you go. Also, a massive fan of the Three Men and a Baby and Three Men and a Little Lady
classics
pair of films. But outside of that, I don't care about cinema. I just care about those films, which makes me incredibly
four.
Yeah. Basically, I'm incredibly boring.
I mean, what else is there really?
Exactly. There's nothing else to life. Anyway, moving back to guitar gear. So what have you got at home at the moment that you can use? Because I guess you're relatively limited. You won't have any of your Kemper stuff.
I've got an Orange Rocker 32 here, which is really cool. When it goes quiet enough, we can
the combo.
Yeah, yeah, which is really cool. That's the only amp I have here.
Right.
So that's cool. So I can actually I've been using that.
Are you using that for like writing stuff, or are you actually going into? Are you going straight into a door and using?
Bit of both. I kind of just because I have various. I've got this great big desk, right? And basically, I use it for about three different things. So I can either be in writing and recording mode, or I can be in like soldering mode and building mode. And so the desk needs to be reconfigured every time. So if I'm in soldering mode, right, which I have been quite a bit, and I just want to have a noodle and have a bit of a bit of a play and get some ideas down, it's Orange. I plug just straight into the Orange and have a go and do that. But if I've also was doing some Skype or Zoom lessons in the.
Oh yes, I saw this.
Yeah, so for that I was using because obviously it was given that I've got neighbours and don't really want to be blasting guitar amps or, you know, all hours of the day. So I've been doing stuff through a door, and I've been using STL Tones plugins, which has been super awesome.
Yes, didn't you picked up some that you mentioned just before we tuned in.
Yeah, so I downloaded the Howard Benson suite.
Right.
Which is kind of, it's like five amps. There's like a Bogner in there that's kind of high gain, and there's a bunch of Marshalls sort of a crunchier, and then there's a couple of clean amps. Well, and you can kind of flick between what captures. It's really cool. It's just a good sort of rock and roll platform for kind of going, well, I want a good guitar tone quickly without having to fanny around too much. And so that's been really cool. And then I've sort of got my hands on everything STL Tones do. So
That is a lot of stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit overwhelming.
Even when it comes
to
impulse responses alone, they do an incredible range.
Yeah, there is loads. So I'm sort of sifting through that and picking out what's my favourite. And it's a lot. It is a lot. But it sounds brilliant. You know, there's no latency. It's really cool user interface. I'm into it. And obviously there's a lot of that stuff out there, but this is kind of my first foray into just software-based. Of recent times anyway. Everyone had Amp Farm back in the day. But but this is my current
setup. This is your first
setup.
Return to that. Wow.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've got a couple of plugins in. I've got a Marshall Plexi that's in my Universal Audio interface.
Ah,
Which is cool, and that's great for pedals and stuff. But I sort of lacked a high gain kind of, this sounds distorted enough to kind of do drop detuned sort of riffing stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so the STL Tone stuff was just pretty immediate with that. And that's obviously cool. There's loads of stuff out there. I know the Neural DSP stuff is killer.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about that at the moment on the internet. That seems to be every third post that I flick through on any social platform is Neural DSP at the moment. Everyone seems to be getting very involved.
Yeah, and obviously there's a lot of kind of music which lends itself towards that. I don't, you know, my vibe isn't actually massive saturation, tons of gain, tons of, you know, really uber sort of sounds. It's more like I like pushing an amp to what it can do.
Yeah,
more vintage sort of high gain.
You are relatively traditional in your, you know, as soon as anyone's in a metal band, you'd think it would be a very modern sort of sound. But I think tonally, you're actually very traditional, and you're right in that you're pushing amps to their extremes in a very vintage sense of what an amp's extreme is.
Right. I mean, it's because I'm old, man. I don't get any of this news. I don't understand it. It's too many knobs. I don't understand. It's about when I was coming up, you know, a Marshall JCM 900 was cutting edge. You know what I mean? So I had one of those for years. And then it's kind of just, I've never really moved on from that. Just having an amp which has a good amount of preamp gain on board make use of all of it, obviously, but you know, the Rockerverb, once I sort of discovered the Rockerverb, and when I hit onto them, they were kind of at the Mark II stage, and I was like, yeah, this does everything straight away without having to mess around. And then obviously we've got the Mark IIIs now as well, which are great.
Which was the Mark II the one where they got rid of the middle control?
I want to say that they...
And then they brought it back for the third one.
Yeah, the current ones have a middle.
Yeah, that's right. So I think there was one in between where they got rid of it and then decided to add it back in.
Yeah,
which I was very happy about.
Yeah, I don't really find the clean channel on the Mark II very usable, to be honest.
Right.
It was kind of, I don't tend to do a lot of clean stuff, really. Sure. I tend to do it with a guitar. Again, like just coming up with an amp that did one thing for the most part. I think I had a JCM 900 and it was broken. Like it would only do one channel. I think it had like two volumes in it and it would only do one. Okay. So any kind of clean stuff would be neck pickup, volume down a bit kind of deal. And that was as clean as I would get.
That's great. No, I prefer that. That's cool.
So yeah. So with the Rockerverb, it's kind of set it as nasty as you want to get and then just sort of turn the guitar down a bit. And then that seemed to do the trick. But nowadays I'm late to the party, but I'm all about a really juicy clean amp and then doing stuff with pedals, obviously.
Uh-huh.
Which is why I kind of came to it. I've said it a million times on I think I've said it on this, you know, with with your guys' podcast, but just being faced with a really clean amp in a situation where you don't want a clean sound and then needing a pedal to do the goods, which was how sort of the Red Mist was born, really.
Right.
And that was in answer to your question earlier is, you know, I've gone around the houses significantly, but coming back to that, the pedals that we developed so far were kind of a marriage of things that I wanted and things that Thorpey had in the periphery of his designs and ideas and things he wanted to do. And it's kind of just come together like that, where the Red Mist was a really versatile medium to high gain kind of drive pedal, which you can tweak to make, you know, sound however you want it.
Yeah.
Which was perfect for me because, you know, being stuck in Europe with random guitar amps.
Yeah.
And trying to make them do the thing was quite difficult unless you had something to spice it up. And so many sort of drive pedals just, I don't know, they weren't preferable. So, yeah, you know, the Red Mist was kind of a bit of a development of that idea, a bit of a development of something he was working on, and we came together and that's what was born. The same sort of deal with the Honey Badger, really, given that I'm obviously a big fan of octave fuzz, but every man and his dog does one that does an octave up. And you know, which I love totally. I just bought off Dan Hall, who does 15-second guitar demos. Mm. I just bought Dr. No, Troy Van Leeuwen Octavia off him.
Oh, wonderful.
Which is so awesome.
Yeah. Tons of headroom.
So radical. So cool. It's really loud and it's really exciting. It's just one of those turn on and it's just having all the fun.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were so many of those out there. We just wanted to do something different. And, you know, we could, like you brought up, the OC2 was one of my favourite pedals. The Blue Box was one of my favourite pedals. But we wanted to make something that was like a usable version of those, because, again, the Blue Box is kind of, it's unpredictable. But I found my beef with it was that unless everything on that was maxed out, it didn't really do anything.
That's an excellent point. I'm a big fan of the Blue Box, but yes, the Blue Box is, it's not like you got options with that pedal.
No.
That's you're totally right. You need to just turn it up and then it sounds wonderful. Mm. But
because anything less than maximum on like the volume or whatever the level, it cuts your level.
Do you know, it took me a while to work that out. I thought it was a bad pedal for quite a few years because I suffered from that 12 o'clock syndrome where, you know, you don't want to turn it past that because that would be silly.
but that's it. All our pedals are like designed obviously to sound good at midday, but I think the Honey Badger even at midday the level is a
boost. It's such a loud pedal.
It was the first, you know, the first proper iteration of it we had. I think it was we tweaked the output on it because I just wanted it to be louder basically and have loads of a silly amount of headroom because it was kind of like you had to get it up to about 3 o'clock or about 2 o'clock to be you know, anything past there was like audibly boosting.
Right.
And it was, you know, we kind of looked at each other, we're like, nah, this needs to, we need to, it needs to be like 11 o'clock is kind of where, you know, normal volume is. And then anything past midday is like, core blimey, that's loud.
Yeah. For a pedal that's supposed to be as crazy as that, that's absolutely the right decision.
Yeah. You just want it to like, you know, you want your hair to be like blowing around when you play it.
Yeah, but really interesting that actually both of them, you were thinking of them in mind of a clean amplifier, because that's very much, that is more, I know that you're obviously saying that you're quite happy with that as well now, but that seems to be the thing at the moment. Everyone's kind of realised that actually you can, you know, move towards this clean platform and do everything, tailor everything else, mm-hmm. rather than being stuck with whatever, you know, a particular amp or anything offers.
It's two things, really. It's realizing that I was stuck with certain bits of gear that I just was used to. I think it's a mindset of being left-handed or playing left-handed guitars. This kind of, this is what I've got, this is what it does. And it's kind of, I've never really had that mindset of, I need to go out there and find my thing and really explore. I've kind of just got what I got, made it work, made it awesome, and just done my thing with it. Right. Especially.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Obviously with guitars, especially with, you know, and then with amplifiers as well, effects has always been my platform to kind of experiment. And the other thing for me was I got really turned on to like the clean amp thing by a producer that we were working with, who we'd done various records with. And it was always a fight because I'd come into the studio with this like higher gain head and be like, this sounds awesome. And then he'd be like, no. Less gain. And we'd had a fight about it. And then he, you know, his, one of his amps of choice was like this Master Volume Marshall that was, it was kind of like a, honestly, it was like a JTM. Anyway, it's a very loud Marshall that you have to really pummel to get to distort. You know, one of those like really unhealthily loud ones. And we'd spice it up with pedals. And that's where I kind of got into the idea of running a cleaner amp, louder, and letting a pedal sort of change the sound of it, like the front end.
There's something to be said for that organic headroom, I guess, provided by a loud cleaner.
Yeah, because, you know, you kind of, obviously, when you hear a guitar come off a speaker of a record, it's compressed and there's all kinds of stuff going on after the fact. But that when you're in the studio kind of recording to studio monitors and doing that, you want something to be massively inspiring. And a lot of the time, there's, like you say, there's like that organic massive amount of headroom that's just, it does something to the guitar being big. And being the only guitar player in my band, obviously you're trying to cover a hell of a lot of bases.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, yeah, I've sort of come around to the clean amp thing. Obviously, I use various different things live now, but this whole clean amp vibe with a really spicy pedal in front of it to sort of smash it to bits, I'm kind of there. And it's good timing because we have one on the market.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, speaking of kind of amplifiers for live use, and we obviously when we've had you on the podcast in the past, we've talked about your live sound, but I'd be interesting to hear if it's changed much since then and exactly what you're using for sort of live shows, because you're kind of a guy who uses Kemper and Orange.
Yeah, I've mixed it up a bit over the past couple of summers. I've sort of started using Kemper a fair bit for fly-in stuff for the same reason of just consistency, really.
Right.
But again, it's now gotten to the point where, because, you know, like most people, I'm on the never-ending quest. I've kind of found a readily available thing to get in Europe and in other places. It's a certain kind of orange head. I can't remember what it's called now, but it's a lot cleaner and it gets really loud. And sticking pedals into the front of that is glorious.
Not the,
is it an OR?
Yeah,
it might be an OR 50.
could be the OR50. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's silly loud, and it's a great pedal platform. And finding, like, you know, drive pedals in front of that is kind of blowing my mind a little bit.
Ah.
So, right. Yeah.
But, so kind of a return to the more organic side of things.
Yeah, I'm kind of constantly mixing it up, much to the deepest chagrin of our front of house engineer.
Excellent. That's
big fan of the Kemper. You know, as a company, I think they've really supported guitar players in a very positive way by not continuously changing the hardware and just offering yeah. free updates. You know, yeah. like with the Two Notes stuff, it's just hey guys, now this product you bought does twice as much for free. Boom, have it.
Yeah,
that's brilliant.
Absolutely madness. That is madness. The Two Notes thing is an incredibly awesome thing. But what made you choose Kemper at the time? Because of course there were plenty of other alternatives. You know, you could have gone with Axe FX. I guess around the time that you started using Kemper, the first Line 6 Helix iteration was probably around.
So I've never tried a Line 6 Helix as of yet. I'd love to. I haven't managed to do that yet. Just not enough hours in the day. But I was using Axe FX for a good period of time on the road because basically it was a one box solution just to do effects and stuff in front right. of an amp. And we were doing all kinds of stuff with MIDI at the time. And it was a more affordable solution for time-based effects and stuff like that all to work in sync with one another without having all kinds of points of failure in a guitar rig. It basically was kind of, you know, less stuff to go wrong was the idea, which is what got me into the idea of using some digital stuff. However, my beef with it was that it was incredibly hard to program. You know, once you got your head around it, it was, you kind of got it, you had to speak the language, but it was incredibly hard to back up and to restore and to maintain. I seemed to be the only person I knew who could figure it out. And I had, I had guitar techs from some really big bands emailing me and going, how do you do this thing with the Axe FX?
Oh, no.
How do you, yeah.
That's not a sign of,
That's the truth. And
wow.
And I think it's a kind of a transatlantic divide where guys in the US were a bit more familiar with the Axe FX. Almost nobody in the UK that I was working with knew anything about how it worked, so
right.
basically switching to Kemper was kind of like my guitar tech advised it, and it's the first time I've really sort of really taken a guitar tech's advice in that sense of my own, to be like, shut up, I know what I'm doing. But no, it was just the kind of, these work great for touring, these work great for, you know, fly shows, and you can take your whole set around on a USB stick, and it's worked out really well for that. But it's not, you know, it's not ideal for certain things, but it takes pedals well, and yeah, you know, they're readily available. And I like the company ethos that they've not continually changed the hardware, unlike Fractal, where, you know, who have continually changed the hardware.
Yeah.
And, you know, even as a consumer, I just wasn't down with that, really. I just thought,
I think it's one of the risks with digital stuff, having seen... I appreciate we've now moved into kind of a new digital age where digital amps are being very much taken much more seriously than maybe mm-hmm. they were a decade ago. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly a risk. You know, I think of the people that took the plunge on the GT100, you know, even stuff like that. But mm-hmm. it's, you know, I'm like, wow, I would hate to be in that position, because I think I still use some pedals and bits and bobs that I bought 15 years ago. But if you get into the digital side of things, then that product that you bought 15 years ago is you're not gonna be able to update it, and it's going to be so outdated in that time. So I think that is the risk going digital, is that how long will this last? Does this have the lifespan of an iPhone?
Absolutely. And from a business model, I suppose the people making things like that, kind of, that's something they have in mind. You know, I've recently bought 3 adapters for my MacBook Pro, which has set me back loads of money, because you have to do that. And that's great for Apple, but it sucks for me. And, you know, it's the same with certain companies who continually change their hardware. It doesn't really work for me. And, you know, one of the biggest reasons for anyone to buy anything is, what's the resale value of this thing?
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
absolutely. You know, that's the very reason I sold my Axe FX stuff, was because I saw the value of it dropping, and they released the Axe FX just before they released the 3. I think I just got rid of it.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And, you know, that's what I do like about the Kemper, because I know that when they do bring out a new one, it will be significantly different. Obviously, they did the floor one, which is really cool.
The floor is the first time I got very excited about Kemper.
Right.
That for me, I didn't like the idea of having to buy both pieces separately for sort of nearly the same price.
No. But. And I noodled around with the Axe 8, like the floor based. Uh-huh. Axe FX thing. I had one of them, and had that for like clinics and things like that I was doing. But yeah, it just, again, really hard to edit, really hard to do stuff with. I haven't got my hands on a Kemper floor thing yet. I don't know what it's actually officially called, but I haven't tried one, mainly because I'm sure it's awesome. I know it'd be awesome, but I've already got two Kempers, and just.
And I guess, is your stuff done off stage? Is your pedal work done
that's
off stage?
That's the main thing, is I don't like having audio on stage.
Right, yeah.
Basically, I just want to have like MIDI control-y things on stage. So I've got a pedal board off stage that's got a few pedals on, ones that you can't really recreate with anything digital.
Right.
It's got a whammy on it. It's got a space echo on it, like the Boss pedal, you know, the RE20.
RE20.
And what else has it got on it? It's got it's got Red Mist on it. It's got Honey Badger on it. Obs. And yeah, that's it. It's just those four. And everything else, pretty much. I think I do. There's a few reverbs that happen in the Kemper. A few delays that happen in the Kemper. And other than that, yeah, everything else is it's just a few pedals into the front of a relatively clean sounding guitar amp in the Kemper. I believe it's a Marshall. I think so.
Oh, really?
I think that's one I'm sort of most favoriting at the moment. But I go back and forth. I profiled my whole rig, my whole orange rig, and that's something I lean on as well. But for really getting the most out of the Red Mist and things like that, it prefers a cleaner amp.
Right.
Versus putting it in front. If you put the Red Mist in front of something super gainy,
it's going to go crazy.
Oh my god! Yeah, it's overkill. It's too much. I never thought I'd say that, but it is too much.
Yeah, absolutely. In testament to the Kemper, I've probably said this before on the podcast, but my guitarist Tim, a massive technophobe, no good with anything like that. I borrowed a Kemper and lent it to him once when we were in a studio, just because he needed to track guitar in the same room as the drummer, etc. You know, whatever. So it needed to be a silent rig just with him on headphones. Mm-hmm. So I showed him how to flick through the presets, and I was just like, it's just guide guitar. Get yourself a rough sound. And he found one that he liked, and you know, without him knowing anything about it, I was like, okay, what one did you use? And he was like, oh, it's this one. It's called the Rocket Dirty, which is the orange Rocker 30, mm-hmm. which is the exact guitar amp that he played through at that time. And right. I just thought it was an incredible testament to Kemper that this guy, who didn't know anything about it, essentially blind testing, found his exact amp on the Kemper and was like, oh yeah, this sounds great.
Wow.
So so
there's some familiarity there. That's great.
Yeah. So really, you know, excellent job of Kemper. Because I'm never sure about that with any of the modelling things. Like, I'm flicking through and it's telling me that it is this amplifier. But, you know,
I think it's a user versus like end user kind of argument, where I see so many people, you know, complaining about using digital stuff, using modelling stuff. And I totally get it. Like, yeah, there's no substitute for having 100 watts behind you of real tube guitar amp going nails into your trousers. Like, there's no substitute. It's the best thing ever.
Yeah.
You know, but when you think that if you're playing any kind of live thing, with, you know, and obviously I'm speaking from my own experience here. This isn't like, come on, guys, get on board. Like, I obviously realize that I play some big stages in front of some big crowds, and I play some small stuff in front of small crowds. I do all kinds of different things. And a lot of people play in front of smaller crowds. Some people play in the bedrooms, yada, 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 I get it. I'm talking about for me here. For me, the argument is that the person in the festival field who's sort of had three pints and is jumping up and down, they're not bothered. And so I'll take it. I always joke about it. I say, like, anyone who can sort of pick the difference between, like, in the crowd, you can pick the difference between real guitar, guitar amp, real tube amp, and the modeled, a good, well dialed in, good modeling tone, then, you know, I'll refund that person. They can have their money back and they'll never darken this show again.
Wow.
But no, I agree. You know, I when I was 18, I had a 4x12 and a big heavy Marshall, and I've had something in some various different formations of that ever since. And it's the best. It's what everyone wants, is this great big loud guitar amp. If you're playing like rock or rock and roll, or, you know, that's what got me into it, is just big loud guitars. And then obviously from a technological point of view, where you have lots of needs that you need to do to travel around the world and or travel around the country, and you need it to be the same every night, and you're using in-ears and doing all that stuff, and you're trying to up your performance, and your show is like your bread and butter, and you want that to be as good as it could possibly be. You know, moving a microphone off axis or by 5 millimeters can completely ruin your night.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this is awful. What's happened? It sounds atrocious. Well, the amp sounds great, but the mic's sort of pointing yonder and it doesn't do the thing anymore. So, you know, all the digital stuff, it kind of just takes that away.
Eliminates potential issues. Yeah.
You know, some people like making bolognese and it's different every time, but some people want it to be the same every single time and, you know, be like consistently good and or consistently good enough to put a smile on someone's face every time. And so it's, you know, it depends what school of thought you are, really.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. I mean, yeah, I came to that conclusion even at the level of shows that I play. I came to that conclusion long ago, which is why I still use the Boss MS3 you know, for virtually all my tones, because I realized whilst at home, yes, you know, on the shelving unit behind me, there are, last stock check, 230 something effects pedals, but I don't want to risk patch cable issues, control knobs being knocked and me not seeing on a dark stage, things like that, or I run everything digitally. It's relatively simple sounds that I've got, you know, clean drive, a little bit of crazy vibrato and a ring mod, you know, if you can run all of those internally and not have to worry about the risk of anything going down, then realistically at a show when you're playing to a load of drunk people, then, you know, by all means, on a record I will always bring that stuff along, but for live shows I would much rather not do that thing where you've got to, you know, get down on the floor in the middle of a set and try and troubleshoot a pedal board that's stopped making noise.
Bring your tone back to life or whatever. No, you just don't need it. But, you know, that's why I keep everything off stage as well. Just
yeah, of course,
you know,
yeah.
Just the, you know, pedals are on a shelf. They don't get touched. They just come on and off. You know, various pedals are pretty much always on for the most part. And the amps sound of thing, the amp side of things is the same. So consistency for me is everything. And, you know.
Absolutely.
And, you know, something like the Honey Badger, as of yet, like no modeler I know of does anything like that. So, you know, which is why you want one stuck in front of whatever it is you're using. Cause,
absolutely.
Yeah, it just sounds crazy and weird. And that, I guess the crazy and the weird stuff, the really analog stuff, is what that stuff struggles. I've obviously used the Whammy forever, and it's a big part of a bunch of songs we play. And
yeah,
I kind of, I'm not stoked on some of the ones that are in the box with some of those modeling things. So
a weird one, the Whammy, isn't it? And it's something that I haven't really found a decent digital replication of anywhere, whether it's in something that I've got in an effects pack, you know, with a door, or whether it's something that's built into, whether it's Helix or the Boss software on the GT1000 or anything like that.
It's weird, really, because it is a digital pedal, you know, completely. And yet it's something about the chips that were available in the early 90s on the Whammy 1 that they either stopped making, or I don't know what happened. I get it's kind of like the digital equivalent of why the Memory Man's so awesome, because, you know, getting those chips for a Bucket Brigade style analog delay, if it's not them, it doesn't sound the same. And I assume it's the same with the Whammy. It's just the way the way that thing's made, you know, the guts of it were, that's the special sound. And I'm not really a massive fan of like the polyphonic whammies, since it's the glitchy stuff that it does, which makes it special, you know, that kind, like you say, that kind of Jack Whitey kind of vibe for me. And even though, yeah, I think he's a whammy four, I think. But I've got a couple of whammy ones, and they stay at home. They don't go out. I use a whammy four and a whammy five, which can switch between monophonic or polyphonic, and I always have it on monophonic because that's the glitchy sound.
Yeah, of course. It's the imperfections that make perfections.
Yeah, and none of the modelers do it. It just sort of, all their whammy sounds too perfect, and they're all often polyphonic, which is great if that's what you want. You know, if you want to play a big chord and it sort of sound, you know, like the Pog does. The Pog's a great pedal, but I never grew up with a Pog, so I never really...
Oh, really? Right.
Yeah, I only just got a Pog 2 in like the last
that would
4 or 5
be...
years.
Part of your arsenal, I guess.
I never came to. I could never afford it. I'll be honest. Like the big box Pog was really expensive, and
yeah, I guess it was.
You know, and then when I only just got a Pog 2 like in the last 4 or 5 years, and it's great, but it's kind of a bit late now because I've kind of found other things to do. You know,
everything does that now.
Yeah, it's, you know, but I'm a big fan of those like glitchy, analogy kind of octave sounds. You know, which is why I can't really do without a whammy on the board. You know, I own a Space Echo, which is I love, but that's obviously not going to come out on the road. I'm not Matt Knight. I'm not crazy. So I use a pedal based version, which does the job. You know, it does more or less what you expect it to do. It doesn't do like the actual tape skipping around and getting all knotted up inside and then you have to repair it, but it does do the sound of a Space Echo consistently.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's sort of the trade-off of consistency, sounding the same every night, and the excitement factor, like the secret source of glitchy weirdness, which is why, you know,
yeah, absolutely,
whammies and honey badgers get me all excited. 'Cause, you know, you play the same thing as good as you can every night, and hopefully it sounds just about the same, but it's that kind of scrunky, weird glitchiness, which is like that's the stuff that gets me going anyway.
I don't want for rock and roll, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want it to sound perfect, you know.
No, absolutely.
You know, I'm there to mess things up. That's why I'm there, just to kind of throw a guitar around, pick a fight with it, you know.
That is exactly what rock and roll is supposed to be all about.
Yeah.
And we're getting on for the end of the podcast at the moment, but I want to talk about guitars a bit before we go.
Yeah,
spoken about any of those. Now, yeah, again, you came on the podcast when I think you first had the Manson MD1 released, which would have been back in like 2018, I guess.
I think it was 2017, beginning of 2018.
Wow, it's been around a while now.
It might have even been the year before that. You know, I don't know. God, I don't know. Wow.
But I want to talk about that guitar again, and I want to talk about, you know, I was going to ask you if you've bought anything new, like what your guitar collection's up to these days, because as a left-handed player, you know, obviously it's a touch trickier, so I imagine when you find something awesome that you buy it.
Absolutely, yes. And I also, do you know, since the last time we've probably talked guitars, like in this context, I have gotten rid of a lot of stuff.
Yes, you did it. You did a big old sale. I remember it was probably maybe a year ago, maybe longer than that. Now you sold through a lot of stuff. I can't remember if it was Reverb or eBay, but
yeah, it was Reverb. I did an artist shop with Reverb. And
oh yeah, that was it.
Sold about 20-25 guitars, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, various things, you know, and my goal was to whittle stuff down to a keepable, maintainable amount of gear, and I'm still not completely there, to be honest. You know, I've got guitars here, there and everywhere, and I did another count the other day and I think I'm still at like 17 or something. I wanted to get it down to like 5, and not including
did
like my
life 5,
yeah, like, you know, like 5 that you keep at home,
right? Oh, okay, fine.
You know, I mean, I'm always going to have like always going to have guitars that live in a lockup for you know, touring and writing and stuff like that, but in your downtime, or you know, when you want to stuff that kind of is special and lives in the case most of the year and doesn't, you know, you bring out for Christmas, that kind of thing, and stuff that you're never going to part with. So I've got 74 Les Paul Custom that I'm not getting rid of. I've got a 70
what finish?
It's black.
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 None more black. It's super awesome. Weighs a ton.
Wow.
Love it.
It's that like sounds like my absolute dream.
Yeah, it's the Fretless Wonder kind of deal. It's the 20th anniversary model.
Right.
I believe.
Wow.
It says that at the 12th fret, but it's kind of almost illegible now. It's kind of worn away.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's kind of battered. It's, you know, I have what they, I think what they call like player grade guitars generally.
Yeah.
I don't really do well with keeping anything pristine. I obviously think PRS and things like that are beautifully made, but I'm just, I couldn't have them because I just ding them, you know.
Yeah.
You smash like a ring into them, or like you knock them on something, or open a beer on the corner of one or something like that. That's what happens. So
there was a Les Paul custom released by Epiphone, and I'm glad that I can't remember the name of the person who had it released, but they had a bottle opener fitted to the back of it.
That's quite cool.
I can't remember who it was, but that was great.
That's pretty smart.
Yeah, that's very smart.
I mean, if you're not using your teeth, then
yeah,
you know, then you know why. But I've got a 78 telly that's really cool. Again, that's black, which is really cool, and that's battered. That's staying. I've got my Ratacaster, which is like my silver telly.
That's the one that you... Is that the parts caster that you put together yourself?
Yeah.
I think that's... Because I think the first time I met you was like 2000 and... Maybe 2014 when I was working with Total Guitar. You wouldn't remember, but I was working with Total Guitar, and you did a Me and My Guitar interview at Download Festival. I was doing the sound.
Yeah, I remember. I remember.
Yeah, but I think that's the guitar that you brought along for that interview.
I'd actually had... it was my main spare that I did use that for that interview, which was a blonde version of that same guitar. It was the same idea. It was a... telly body. I think that was actually a Japanese telly body with a Highway 1 Strat neck bolted onto it.
That's right.
And I put a black scratch plate on it. I put hot rails in the bridge, put other things. I wired it volume. And yeah, that was my sort of my backup for forever. And then I actually did sell that I'd actually let that one go.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, and someone bought it, which was amazing, really. Because, you know, it's a random left-handed parts caster that someone
still, and that you had Seymour Duncan hot rails in the bridge as well.
Yeah.
Because that's what you've gone for in the MD1, in your Manson Signature model, which is a kind of a T-style guitar.
Kind of, yeah. So with the ones you can buy, the MD1 has its sort of more stock hardware and pickups. So it's got Seymour Duncan pickups in it. The MD2 is the same guitar, but it's just got premium hardware, and it's got Psychopath brand pickups in it, which is the Manson's own brand, and that's got their equivalent. It's actually, I actually prefer it, God's honest truth, I prefer it. It's got a Psychopath, what's it called, a British Rail Ice-T, which is their T-style dual blade humbucker telly style. And they do a T. I think it's the British Rails T, and which is a bit hotter, which I started off with, but it was a bit too aggro, believe it or not. I was like, it's great, but it only does one thing. It only does like the really sort of, because it's a ceramic humbucker, and it's really barky, which is awesome. But there's no, I didn't find it to be, when you back the volume off or anything, I didn't find it to do anything. Like, I find that ceramic rails humbuckers have this kind of irritating bark to them when you do anything but full pelt.
Right.
And that's great, but if you've
just
got...
dynamics doesn't work too well.
Yeah. So if you're... exactly. It's kind of great for just balls-to-the-wall stuff, but then anything else, you're kind of like, neck pickup. So the cool rails is kind of a lower output version of that, which does that thing, but also cleans up a lot better. So that's what's in the MD2. I think they offer that in the MD2. They might put the hot one in there just to completely contradict me. But that's the one I use in mine. And it's got a Benchmark in the neck, which is like their PAF style. And my signature one just has this groovy little cover on it, which makes it look kind of...
Yeah, it looks great. It looks really vintage.
A bit Cybertron-y. Yeah. A bit, looks like, what's it called? A Cylon from Battlestar Galactica. It looks like a bit like one of their faces.
Okay.
Is it Cylon? Is that what they're called?
I don't know.
Again,
if it's not Hook or...
it looks like Rufio.
Okay, there you go.
It doesn't look like Rufio. It was the only Hook reference I could think of quick to hand. But you know what I was talking about. So.
Yeah, I knew you
too. Yeah, and yeah, so but they do come with Seymour's as an option instead, which is right. You know, a more affordable option. We're working on a sort of semi redesigned MD model right now, actually.
That's really cool. I mean, it's, you know, you're obviously I think you're the still the newest signature model by Manson.
They haven't really branched out with anybody else. I mean, obviously they've got the John Paul Jones bass.
Yeah.
They've got a million and one Matt Bellamy guitars.
Yeah.
And yeah, the MD is kind of
easily the most accessible. Priced signature model that you can get from Manson guitars. Was that a deliberate thing? Were you trying to make this a more sort
absolutely of, yeah. yeah absolutely. And to be honest, the things we're working on, hopefully we're looking to bring out a more even more affordable model.
Wow, that's fantastic. I think that's a really important thing to have with a signature model guitar. Like as a bass player and as a massive Led Zeppelin fan, I would love to own a John Paul Jones. But it's not really my style, and at £2,400, it's you know, that's too much money for me to spend just to have something with his name on it.
Yeah.
So I love the fact that you'd be going in at kind of an affordable price point. There have been artists in the past who have done that, who have had that idea that they want their signature model to be something that everyone can buy, and I've always really respected that. I think that's a really cool thing.
That's 100%, because you know I'm not under any apprehension that, you know, putting my name on something is going to sell 10,000 units in the first, you know, it's a niche. I play in, I'm a kind of a weird guitar player in a niche band, a relatively unheard of band globally. So I wouldn't expect anything that I put my name to be like a slam dunk for a brand to kind of expect to sell thousands and thousands and thousands of, you know, but the ones we do put out, obviously I want people to be able to afford to buy them, and I want them to I just want stuff that has an attitude about it, is versatile to a point, and is affordable, and people, you know, people can afford to get it. That's really important.
Yeah, it's a wonderful crossbreed of like modern and traditional stuff, right. Which I'm a big fan of. Like I think trying to make something that's kind of got those nice features that make it reliable, mm-hmm. more playable, but without, you know, I love the way old stuff looks. So yeah. Kind of coupling those two things together, I think is a really cool, important thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You went for, like, you know, it's an ebony board as well on the MD.
Yeah.
One and two as well.
Yes. So I think that when we decided to do that, it was in around that time where the CITES thing was like on overdrive. And it was kind of, we can choose, because every guitar I've ever really fallen in love with for the most part was either ebony or rosewood.
Right.
I don't have a lot of guitars that have maple fretboards. I've got a couple, I like my old Fender, my old Telly's got maple one, and it's kind of, it's cool because it's old and it's kind of got that kind of shiny but beaten up vibe to it. And it's got chunks of it missing, but generally new maple neck guitars I really struggle with, because they just kind of, I don't know what it is. I haven't with the exception of like a Music Man that I tried that seemed to do the thing. I tend to just feel like I feel a bit more at home on a rosewood or ebony board straight away. Sure. Like with a couple of weeks worth of sweat in them from playing, it's like, yeah, this is right. Whereas with the maple stuff, it's kind of never. It never really seems to soak up the sweat.
No, I agree. Yeah, it always feels a bit slippery to me.
A bit pristine, a bit, I don't know. I don't know what it is. And obviously I don't own a stack of vintage guitars. So yeah, if it's something new, I generally get on better with. It's not a tonal thing per se, because I like the look of maple. I don't dislike the sound of it, if you like, but it's more of a feel in how it feels in your hands thing. And when you're playing something all the time and you need some familiarity there. So, yeah, just the rosewood, and we went with ebony purely because I'm a fan, and we were trying to get around an availability and exportability conundrum that CITES was presenting.
Right,
and then, you know, as it went, it wasn't a problem in the end, and I think CITES actually have relaxed the rosewood thing. Am I right in thinking?
Yeah, that's correct. You know what? We haven't mentioned anything about it on the podcast because I think we started getting press releases through from various brands about the fact that this was around the corner so long ago that sort of I think it's happened and we've just forgotten to actually talk about it because it was something that no one could talk about for so long. So yeah,
right. Well, and obviously I'm assuming that people listening are kind of completely familiar, but the, obviously yeah. the CITES, it's a board of that protects certain species of certain things. Is that right? So certain species of woods were considered high risk or, you know, close to extinction and...
Certainly. Largely due to the furniture business, really, right. rather than the guitar business, because, of course, the very small about right. this small amount of rosewood that actually gets used by the
right.
the guitar industry.
So rosewood was put on a protected list, and as such, manufacturers who were exporting things with rosewood on them had problems doing that. So, yeah... So, but I think they've relaxed on that now a bit. So, ebony. I actually prefer the look of ebony, if I'm honest, because it's genuinely more dark, I think, rather than rosewood. I just prefer the darker looking rosewoods. You know, I'm not a fan of it when it kind of gets a bit more orangey looking. Oddly enough.
Yeah, definitely. Rosewood can you can get some bad rosewoods.
It just looks kind of cheap and looks dry.
Yes.
I like that kind of like looks moist all the time.
Exactly.
Looks like it's been oiled.
and ebony essentially gives you that all the time. So
yeah, and it's kind of got that cool snap to it as well that I like.
Yeah.
So yeah, I can't believe I'm talking with this much detail about woods. What have I become?
Unfortunately, this is the problem with being a guitar nerd. You do find yourself. So, you know, at least it's me. At least you haven't got stuck in a 50-minute chat about capacitors with Matt Knight. You know.
So, oh yeah.
We've been there. It's terrible.
We could do that.
You can't get out.
We could do that.
Anyway, that does actually that brings us up to all the time that we have on this week's episode of the Friday Special. So it's been absolutely wonderful to have you on, Mikey.
Thanks man.
Thank you very much for taking the time to come and chat with us.
Thanks for having me, dude. You know me, I love it.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely have you back again. And you know, me and Mikey spoke just before we started this podcast about doing another episode, maybe with Mikey and Adrian Thorpe from Thorpe Effects together. So it'd be fantastic if we get you guys back on a little bit later for something like that.
Yeah, if you know, he's the bigger nerd of the pair of us, and I just typically bring the tone down. So it could be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can check out Redbeard Effects at redbeardeffects.com. So go and do that and get yourself absolutely, if you haven't checked out the Honey Badger, make sure you check out the Honey Badger, you know, and obviously the Red Mist Mark IV as well, with the Honey Badger being the new pedal. And you can, of course, catch more Guitar Nerds over on our Patreon at patreon.com/guitar nerds, or you can join us on any of the major social platforms with @guitar nerds. And we'll be back next week with our regular episode on Wednesday and another Friday special on Friday. We'll catch you then for more of this guitar nerdery. Farewell.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.